Shalom,
אנחנו קוראים מ...
Hello, we're reading from the Pesach articles. The article, What is a Lily Among the Thorns in the Work? We would start reading from the beginning of the article, but in Hebrew from page 242 in the Passover booklet to page 244, we remind you, you can ask questions on Kav.TV and questions related to the studied materials will be asked during the lesson.
A lily among the thorns. That's the revelation of the Creator who is amidst the thorns. And with these thorns that prick you, stab you, scare you, through them we need to reach Him. It's impossible any other way. Do we cancel out these thorns? No. We allow them to stab at us. And despite that, with that, reach the lily. Let us see.
What is a lily among the thorns in the work? It is written in the Zohar, as a lily among the thorns, so is my wife among the daughters. The Creator wished to make Israel similar to what is above. So there would be one lily in the earth that is like the lily above, which is Malchut. And the fragrant lily, finer than all the lilies in the world, is only one that grows among the thorns. This one smells as it should, which are 70 souls, and brought them among the thorns, which are the Egyptians. At that time, the lily blossomed among them. When the Creator wished to pick out the lily from among them, the thorns dried out and were thrown away and were corrupted until they were regarded as nothing. We should understand, what does it imply to us in the work when a person must be similar to the upper lily? And what specifically, and why specifically when one is among the thorns, he is regarded as more select and finer than the rest of the people. As it is written, this is why 70 souls went down to Egypt, so as to become finer. Bala Sulam said, why is Malchut called a lily? It is because a person can assume the burden of the kingdom of heaven only by overcoming the will to receive in him. Since it comes and asks a person when he wants to work in order to bestow, meaning for the sake of the Creator and not for himself, what is this work for you? That is, what will you get out of wanting to work for the sake of the Creator? It is written in the Passover Haggadah, the answer is blunt, he's stiff. This means that we must not argue with it, but blunt its teeth. Meaning, we have to overcome it by force. That is, when it comes with its questions, and we must remember that it comes with these questions precisely when one wants to work in order to bestow, then there is room to ask, why? But when a person works in order to receive reward, this wicked one has nothing to ask. We must not reply or contemplate what to answer it. Instead, a person must know that it is a waste of time to want to find answers to its questions. Rather, when it comes and asks, a person should immediately treat it with force and overcome it with force and not by arguments. And since each time, even when a person has overcome it, it is still not impressed by it, and each time a person wants to do something for the sake of the Creator, it comes promptly with its questions. There are numerous blunt its teeth here. This is why Malchut is called a lily. In other words, when a person wants to be rewarded with the kingdom of heaven, called faith, he must undergo a process of many blunt its teeth, which is why Malchut is called Lili. Teeth in Hebrew, Shinaim, and Lili, Shoshana. He says that this is the meaning of to the victor on lilies, meaning that the victory comes specifically through lilies. According to the above, we can interpret the meaning of as a lily among the thorns. And why is it that specifically when she is among the thorns, she is finer than other lilies? We should know what thorns are in the work. In corporeality, the thorns prick the lily. But what does this imply in the work? It means that when the wicked comes and asks, "What is this work for you?" with these questions, it pricks man's thought and heart and makes a person suffer. As thorns prick in corporeality, so the questions prick the person. He suffers torments, meaning that these questions distance him from the work. Since one cannot always overcome its questions, and he begins to see that he is declining from the Kedusha, holiness. Since normally these questions come during an ascent, when a person understands that it is worthwhile to work in order to bestow. But suddenly, it comes with its questions, and one must overcome it. At that time, a person comes and asks for help from the Creator to help him, since he sees that by himself, he cannot overcome it. It follows that he always needs heaven's mercy. As it is written in the Zohar, the help that comes from above is regarded as a soul that he receives each time. This is regarded that the help he receives from above is light that gives one the power to overcome the evil in him. It was said about this, he who comes to purify is aided. By this we can interpret the words as a lily among the thorns. And a lily that is more fragrant and finer than all the other lilies in the world is only one that grew among the thorns. In other words, because she is among the thorns, they prick her, meaning the kingdom of heaven. When a person takes upon himself to work in order to bestow, this is called a lily. At that time, the wicked comes with his questions of, "What is this work for you?" and pricks the kingdom of heaven in his heart. Each time he must overcome and pray and ask for help. By this, the lily becomes fragrant. For fragrance is, as it is written, and they smelled in the fear of the Creator, which is finer than all the lilies in the world, who have no thorns to prick them. Those lilies are not as fine as the lily that is among the thorns. This comes to teach us that one should not be impressed when the wicked keep coming to him and asking the question, "What is this work for you?" And he cannot overcome it. It is not as one sometimes thinks, that these thoughts come to him because he is unfit for the work of the Creator. On the contrary, the fact that the wicked comes to him is because from above they want to help him attain upper Kedusha. This is why he is given these disturbances, so as to have a need to ask for help.
Meaning, the more thorns he has in the work, more disruptions in the work, and he understands he needs to overcome that, he advances and gets higher and higher, and he shouldn't despair. He should keep going through all these thorns, these questions and problems of various sorts. He just needs to know that all these things, from the smallest disruption to the greatest, they all come from the Creator. The Creator put this in his way in order to strengthen him so that he grows in his inclination to bestow upon the Creator.
Therefore, when one sees that he is unfit by nature to be able to work in order to bestow, his work at that time is to increase his prayers to the Creator to help him from above, so he can work in order to bestow. Conversely, an ordinary lily, meaning other people who observe Torah and mitzvot in order to receive reward, although this is also regarded as a lily, meaning that the body does not agree to observe Torah and mitzvot even in order to receive reward, and it requires labor and effort as well, since we must believe in reward and punishment to which the body objects. But nevertheless, because it is not not against nature, since his work is for his own benefit, the lily in his heart, which is called Kingdom of Heaven, is not regarded as feeling that there are thorns that prick her.
Because he's calculating to see what's more worthwhile, to work and receive the next world or to work and receive this world. Is it worthwhile to concede or not to concede, to do a few more actions, a few more commandments, so I'll get more and more rewards and so on. So his work is like every other work of this world. All in all, so his lily, which he wants to get to, isn't amidst the thorns. It's not contrary to his will to receive. He just needs to prove to his will to receive that it's worthwhile to do that. Whereas the lily, which is amidst the thorns, the Malchut Shamayim, the Kingdom of Heaven, as we call it, there is no proof to the will to receive that it's worthwhile to engage with it. So, therefore, each time we need to connect together amongst ourselves and with the Creator and to ask Him to give us some grasp over what we call He hangs the earth in the sky, right, above nothing, like floating through the air, the tower that floats through the air, where I have no options, no ways in which to guarantee to my will to receive that there will be something in it for me. What will I get from it? Why do it? What we call chen dekdusha, the grace of divinity.
Therefore, although lo lishma, not for her sake, is an important thing, this is called a mere lily, since she does not suffer pricks from the thorns. Therefore, he has no need to pray to the Creator to help him overcome. Naturally, he also does not extend kedusha from above, by which he will receive help from above. For this reason, It is called a mere lily. However, a lily among the thorns is finer than all the other lilies in the world because the pricks, meaning the sufferings she suffers from the wicked, causes him to receive new powers from above each time, and by this his soul grows. This is why she is finer than all the lilies in the world. It follows that one should be careful not to say when he sees the wicked always coming to him with questions called thorns, which prick the lily in his heart. He should not say that this is a sign that he is unworthy of this work of bestowal, because it is not for him, since he sees that he hasn't the strength to overcome the evil. Rather, one should believe that every person has the strength to work and achieve the vikut with the Creator. As our sages said, one should always see oneself as half guilty, half innocent. That is, according to the measure of good within him, so is the measure of bad. Otherwise, a person cannot subdue the bad, as it is more than the good. We must believe in our sages who said so, that it is so precisely so that one will be able to decide to the side of merit. Therefore, always, in whatever situation, the bad does not have more power than the good within him. This is why they said, if he performs one mitzvah, happy is he, for he has sentenced himself and the whole world to the side of merit. So far, we were reading.
So here, the main thing is the beginning of this part, where a person needs to believe that each one has the ability to reach adhesion with the Creator. As the sages said, one must always see himself as half owing and half worthy. He must always be one opposite the other, half good and half bad. Otherwise, how can a person overcome the evil, since the evil is greater than the good? Rather, we need to believe in the sages who said that this is specifically so that the person will have the ability to judge to the scale of merit, to tip the scales to the side of merit. Therefore, in each and every state, he doesn't have more good than bad in him. Therefore, if he performs one commandment, then happy is he for having tilted the whole world to the side of merit. So never think that I have good without bad or bad without good. They're always equally weighted. They're just revealed intermittently within the person. So we can't ask our groups now. We can't get questions because the platform is malfunctioning. So I hope all our friends are hearing us, even though we cannot be connected to them in a reciprocal manner. So, okay, let's hope that, we can go over these things again. It also occurs in all of the rest of the articles. Just don't forget that each person has good according to the measure of evil he has in him. He doesn't reveal it yet, it's not apparent, but it's certain that this is how it works. Therefore, one who is completely evil, the complete wicked, as we call him, someone so wicked, the wickedest person in the world, it's a sign that there is great good in him, but it's not apparent, and vice versa.
Can I ask about this, Rav? So, a wicked, the greater he is, what does it mean that he gets questions of doubts more frequently, or?
Yeah, let's say that's how it is. On every degree, there's a slightly different interpretation of this, but yes, let's say that it is so. All right, so we see that we're incapable of overcoming the technical problems, the problems of connection, and so we can't ask questions or answer the friend's questions, and therefore I think that perhaps we should continue to the study of the Ten Sefirot, part 6.
So we'll move on to the Passover book. We will read Tess regarding the Nukva of the Ranpin. There is no English text for it. Maybe we can sing something first.
Just a minute. Just a minute. Let's find it first. Passover booklet.
Page 455 in Hebrew.
Don't swallow your words there. You have to say it. You have to make sure that everyone finds it.
In Hebrew, page 455.
Why there? Why not two pages before?
I guess because we learned it already.
I guess because we... That's not enough. I don't remember that we went over this.
Okay, so page 453, we're going to study part 15.
Yes, and now a song.
We rise and we enter a world that is already made. Change. I was about to jump in. A new chapter begins. Whoa, a whole new thing. I walked in. She gave me some water. Everyone was together. And I was there.